flamethrower Shireen here. Well, am I ever delighted to have on their publication day, Jashvina Shah and Evan Moore, co-authors of Game Misconduct, Hockey's Toxic Culture and How to Fix It. I am so excited to have them here. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Long time coming.
I'm so excited to have both of them here. And let me tell you a little bit about our guest. Jashvina Shah is a friend of the show, has been on before. Jashvina is a reporter who currently covers college hockey and has covered a lot of sport at all levels for a decade. Her work has been featured as an honorable mention in the Best American Sports Writing 2019-2020 editions. Currently, Shah is a national college hockey reporter, and in her free time, she spends it with s'mores. Her dog researches about pirates and crochets. Evan is currently Chicago Public Schools press secretary, but in addition to that, his work, so impactful, consists of topics of the intersections of sport, media literacy, race, politics, violence, and culture. He has been featured in Rolling Stone, Chicago Magazine, Chicago Reader, Chicagoist, DNA Info, ESPN's Undefeated, and Bleacher Report. His work was featured in the 2019 edition of the Best American Sports Writing book series. Evan is also a 2018 Lissagore Award winner, and he is an adjunct professor of journalism at DePaul University and vice president of print for the National Association of Black Journalists Chicago chapter. Woo!
Yeah.
You guys fancy, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so I read this book and I loved it, which can be no surprise to anybody. I need you to tell me about the inception of this book, particularly because it is a book about a sport that is predominantly white, written by two non-white people. So let's talk about how this came to be and how did you both end up collaborating on this important piece?
It was all because of a tweet.
Yeah, that's how it started. Like, she just set that up like a podcast, all because of a tweet. And you just hear the music and then I come in and say, you know, something like, well, we had both been individually been talking about this idea without each other knowing it. And like I said, I saw a tweet and I reached out to Jashvina and was like, hey, I saw your tweet. I'm literally thinking of doing the same thing. Let's, you know, collaborate on this and make it a crossover event. And, you know, she was still with it because over time, you know, being a freelance writer, as you all know, is sometimes you had this information that you never use for a story, or it could be like a kill fee, or you already filed a story and people get back to you like after you've already filed your story. And so you have all this information and that's kind of, you know, like, was my impetus of like wanting to do this.
Okay. So I love that. And it literally, had you guys worked together before or did you meet over Twitter, like in our crew?
Well, we met over Twitter. I had Evan on my podcast once. Evan and I met when the Frozen Four was in Chicago, and apparently when he saw me, I was curling my hair in the hallway, which is very on brand for me. So, oh boy, that trip was a trip.
How many, what year was that?
2017.
Yeah.
Wow. So you decided to collaborate. So did you have an idea and did you pitch editors and publishers? Like, how did it happen?
Well, I mean, you know, journalists, you know, we're around a lot of people who've written books, and I reached out to some like publisher that I knew, and you know, we reached out to Dave Zirin, and we, you know, basically, you know, ripped from his book template, you know, from one of his previous books, and knowing the fact that some publishers, they won't even like talk to someone unless you have a literary agent. Or some of them, they want two or three chapters already, you know, for them to take a look at. And hockey books are a tough sell. And we're talking about something that, you know, that's going to piss a lot of people off. And we reach out to a couple of publishers who was like, this is great, but where's the audience or whatever? And, you know, looking back, you know, like the publishers who we thought this would be a slam dunk were like, thanks, but no thanks. And the publisher found books where we were kind of like, well, they probably won't do it because they do a lot of instant books that come out when the championship like won like within a day or two later. You're like, how did the book even out already? And also, you know, they've written, you know, books about some of the people that we talk about in our book. So I was also kind of wondering, like, you know, they go, you know, talk to us about this. And I remember one of our very first meeting with the publisher over the phone, and one of them was like, oh yeah, hockey players are so great. They're this and that. They're saw the earth people and everything else. And we're like, well, that's kind of it. Like, you know, why do they get to have that exclusivity and other players and other sports are seen as, you know, barbaric or some of the worst tropes and stereotypes you can have for players. So yeah, that first conversation the publisher was a spirited one. So
spirited. And oh, those salt of the earth hockey players, just, you know, wow. Josh, did you get initial pushback? Because, I mean, you are not someone who has ever shied away from that. And you get a lot of criticism generally because of the nature of the work that you do and what you talk about. Have you felt that with this particular project?
Do you mean like generally or from when we were kind of shopping it to publishers?
Both, actually. That's a great question. I didn't think about publishers, but yeah, obviously that's probably.
Yeah, because we did get rejected a couple times, actually, before we landed with Triumph. And it was more so like not really a lot of pushback, but they just didn't want to take it on. Personally, like from where I am in college hockey, at this point in my life, I have pretty much pissed off a lot of people who just generally do not mess with me. So they're just not, they just don't acknowledge my presence. So they're not going to say anything one way or the other. Like they'll just ignore it, like straight up ignore it. So I mean, Evan and I have had people tweet at us, like random people who, like, you know, are Matt 7,500, you know, those people, like, will tweet at us just being like, no one cares. And I had, I was tweeting at a hockey player actually, because I was like, oh, you might be interested in our book. And someone had responded and said, no one wants to see more of your work. And I was like, I don't know. I'm so used to it, but it's just like, I mean, they're just the same trolls, so it doesn't, whatever, their opinion doesn't really matter. So, I mean, there are, like, some creeps who are constantly stalking our Twitter feeds, which is just, they don't realize their behavior is very creepy, but it is, and they should stop, who are, like, constantly screaming. It's just very, very weird. So, yeah, I guess, like, there has been pushback in that sense. I haven't really felt it directly from any of the teams or so, and actually, I now don't cover the Big Ten anymore because I'm national, but I was up until very recently. So actually one of the interviews in my book is Ryan Miller, and I got a hold of him because I know the head coach at Michigan State because I've been covering him since he, you know, started coaching college. And, you know, he's someone who I explained to him what we were writing about, and I just said, hey, like, you know, I know Ryan Miller is like involved in a lot of activism and stuff. Would you mind seeing if you could connect him with me? And he did. Like there's no pushback whatsoever. So, I mean, I've gotten a lot of support from people in college hockey. Like I know when I'm in Chicago, I'm definitely meeting up with my Big Ten people. We're going to celebrate. So yes and no, but a lot of people in college hockey are too afraid of me to be publicly outspoken against the book. So that's kind of where we are.
I think that's something that's powerful and also can be something that it's almost like when you get that criticism, you know you're doing something right. What I wanted to ask was that there's, you know, a pretty wonderful community and a burgeoning community of racialized people that are into hockey and those that are from the margins. And what I really love about the book is that you actually hit on a lot of those things. It wasn't just actually about, you know, structural racism and institutionalized racism within hockey. And you separate hockey, the game and hockey from the toxic culture, which I think is really important and it's done in a very meaningful way, but also how you also outline racism, but also sexism and sexual violence, bullying and hazing, ableism, homophobia, transphobia, and biphobia. And I think I've never seen it all in one place before because there's different people who talk about different things in their wheelhouse, but you have it literally in this one book. So how did you decide what to talk about, or were both of you on the same page about these things?
I think we were mostly on the same page. I think early on we had we made like a master list of a ton of topics, and then, you know, we had like 50 or something, not 50, but we had a lot. So we had to narrow it down. And these were the kind of six key ones that we decided to feature. And these were the ones that we felt were, I don't want to say the most important, but that needed to be talked about in this book pretty pressingly. And they were big topics. And there were only, you know, like two really that Evan and I sort of fall into the category of. And the other ones, you know, we relied heavily on other people and their experiences and their voices, and like using the book as sort of a vessel for their message and what they've experienced. And just sort of in terms of talking with other people as we were interviewing as well, you know, these were kind of the same topics of things that they thought were really important that, you know, needed to be touched on. There are many more, unfortunately, that we just didn't get a chance to mention, but these seemed to be like the ones that absolutely had to be in the book.
Evan, how much of yourself did you bring to this book?
There are some incidents and some things that family found out about. You know, I talk about how I was called the N-word by a teammate back in high school, and how I kept that to myself. And I remember my mom reading the book, and was like, is that why you wanted to leave that school? I was like, no, but it was top five, you know? So, but yeah, I think for me, like saying in other interviews, how like what one of my goals is, you know, as you know, my daughter plays hockey, and I don't want ever to be a situation where someone, you know, says something to her and, you know, nobody does anything about it. I wanted to, you know, tell me or tell the coach or something. I don't want it to be a situation where like people like me and Akeem Alou who internalized what happened to him for years and had an adverse effect on probably how he saw himself as a person and as a player. And I think a lot about that because I remember interviewing Jamal Mayers for a story a couple of years ago, and we were talking about it, and he was saying, like, thinking about that, he was like, this guy didn't have anybody to reach out to, and he probably, you know, looked at coaching in a negative way from then on. So other stuff is, you know, how I became a hockey fan, because I get that a lot. You know, people always ask, how was a story of a Black man from the South Side of Chicago, you know, being a hockey fan, and not only, you know, being friends, like, you know, being pretty knowledgeable about it. So I'll say that. I'll say, you know, just some of the stuff that's kind of happened over time that I've noticed in the sport, you know, in terms of like, you know, race and cultural things and generational stuff, and like listening to sports talk radio here in Chicago and people just being like, how Blackhawks fans being like really angry that people are talking about the Bulls. And it's like, we're in a basketball city. Like, that's weird. And also the people who are in places like Toronto and hearing from them how they felt like they were turned off by hockey. And I feel like that's a correlation between that and the number of, you know, NBA players who are from, you know, Canada, particularly the Toronto area. And I feel like part of that is the repudiation of hockey culture and that attitude and, you know, historically shutting people out.
I think that's really important, Evan, like the idea of shutting people out, because that's what you both completely push back against, that idea of exclusion. Josh, what about you and your experiences, and how were they instructive in the way that you approached writing this book?
In a way, I think that it was and it wasn't, because I use like writing and journalism as a way to channel my emotions. So like in 2015, when BU lost the national championship game, that was how I dealt with it for like 2 weeks. So I kind of look at everything like from an analytical perspective. And I did mention like some of the experiences that I had had. I don't even know if I mentioned that many looking back at it. I mentioned something that I had reported and kind of what had the story behind that and how the incident wasn't really ever dealt with. The only place that I really put anything personal like that was in the introduction, which I'm so desensitized to what happened that I didn't realize how jarring it is for someone to read it, especially someone who knows me, because my friends, my family, they all know what happened, but I don't think they understand the extent, because my sister-in-law called me and she was quite upset. Like the day she got the book, she opened it up and that's what she started reading. That's not, like, to Evan's point, I mean, it's kind of terrifying to be like, okay, here, you know, I want you to read this book, but I also don't want you to read it because I don't want you to like, it's hurtful, I think, for people who know you, you know, to read what it was like and to know more about what you went through. So that part definitely was kind of vital, I think, for me to add, because it was a really big turning point in my relationship with hockey. But the only place where I used my personal experiences really is that I work for a youth serving organization. So I know a lot about youth protection, and I had the chapter on systemic abuse. So that was something that was super helpful for me because I know what you're supposed to do and I know what's not being done. So while I did do a significant amount of research, I just had that knowledge beforehand.
I really love hearing about this because as racialized folks that cover, you know, hockey, we're often told that our experiences shouldn't inform the way we approach something. But I, you know, I disagree with that. And I think very much who we are and our lived experiences are very valuable. You used real experiences of people, whether it was, you know, Chanel or whether it was Renee Hess as well, who did the foreword.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk. But it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I want to ask about the joy that this book brought you. What was, in co-writing, the most joyous thing about this writing this book? And because the topic is very heavy, and we talk about heavy stuff on this show all the time, but I want to talk about what was joyous for you. Evan, what made you really happy about writing this book?
That made me happy. That's a really good question. I really have thought about that because, you know, we talk about, like you said, a lot of heavy. The content is heavy and it's not fun. And it's, I guess, the fact that people who have been waiting for something like this for a long time. And like you've been saying about, like, let's think about most of the books that have been written about, like, hockey and race and all these other issues. They've been all mostly written by white people, but not in a way where it's like, because what you said about your thoughts on the book is what we pretty much heard from other folks who read the book. They feel like it's a lot of information and they like the way how we tie it all together. And I always tell people, you don't necessarily have to be like a hockey fan to understand it, because these issues are permeate in education and law enforcement and any, mm-hmm. you know, any vocation you can think of. But we're talking about hockey, and it seems to be more insidious and within the sport.
I think for me, the one thing that made me happy was that I got a message from, at the time, he graduated now, but at the time he was a D1 goalie, and he basically said, I want to talk to you. And when we were on the phone, he was basically like, yeah, I'm scared, but I can't, you know, if I put my name to this, then maybe, you know, someone else will too. And for me, like, having been around college hockey for, what, like a decade now, I didn't think that would happen. Because, I mean, I know that we have had, and this player is white, so we have had players of color speak out. But really, we've had a couple, there were a couple players that I talked to who were white. And it was, to me, like, kind of like, you know, trying, I just didn't think that that would really be the case, that, you know, but I mean, we had a player kneeling in North Dakota who was white. And I mean, that's not, while I don't believe that, like, for white people, like, them being scared is an excuse, sort of, like, that's not an easy thing to do in North Dakota. Like, they are crazy about hockey there. You don't, like, it's just, it was a really, probably a really scary thing to do. But being able to talk to those players and have them, you know, be willing to put their name to it and talk about it and say, like, yeah, there's a problem, we need to fix it in a place that's so small, really meant a lot to me, and it really made me happy. And I still talk to this player. So it also personally made me feel less alone, because there are a handful of players that I've known in college hockey who I know, like, I can trust and are good people. So it was nice to have another person.
And I love very much what you just touched upon about community and sort of expanding that community and that community that understands that these things are interloped with hockey, which is one of the reasons it made sense to me that Renee Hess, who was the founder of the Black Girl Hockey Club, did your foreword, because that's what it's about, is community. And you both have really given everybody a gift with this book. Not only is it informative and necessary, but it is, there's at no point where there's a boundary of who can and cannot love hockey. And I think that's so important. But we're going to have some fun because I have both of you on at the same time. So I'm going to do a hockey rapid fire round for both of you. And my questions are not censored, so you got to answer them. Okay.
Okay.
And then we'll do it this way. I'll go Josh and then Evan, and the next one, Evan, then Josh, and back and forth. Okay. So there's only like five questions. Here we go. Rapid fire round. Favorite hockey team of all time, Josh?
Oh, God. College or pro or anything?
Anything.
Obviously, BU.
Evan?
2010 Blackhawks.
Favorite player of all time?
That's really hard. I'm going to go with Doyle Summerby because he was one of my kids. I covered him when he was in college, and I've known him since he was like 18 years old, and I trust him.
For me, Jerome McGinley.
Oh, yeah. Good one. Best hockey rivalry in the game, men or women? Evan?
I would say the best one is Blackhawks and Red Wings because of the respect there. With the Blues, it's pure hate. Let's be honest.
It's a toss-up between USA Canada women or BU and BC.
Okay. Those answers are so on brand. And yes, I was waiting for one of y'all to say that. But yes, your answers are totally on brand. Most influential racialized hockey player of all time? Josh?
I guess it definitely has to be William Avery or Angela James.
I'm going to go to left field and name a league, the Color Hockey League. I'd say that's the most influential, like in terms of slap shots and butterfly style of goaltending.
What I love about that is my question was about player, and Evan's like, no, I'm going to disrupt and I'm going to ignore your question. So I love that for me, and I love that for this. Last question. If you could watch a hockey game with one hockey player, who would it be?
It'd be current or retired?
Both. One of each.
Okay. Player I want to name, he's not officially retired. I'm going to say Dustin Byfuglien because he seems like, you know, pretty crazy and he would have a good time. But I guess in terms of like, he's not really current, but current player? Wow. I'm going to go on left field because I just watched the Amazon Prime documentary scene on the Maple Leafs. So I'm going to go William Nylander.
Okay, I was not expecting Neil. Like, I'm like, I feel like this is a personal attack. You know I'm a Habs fan living up in here.
Oh yeah, I know. I was watching that and I was like, Serena's gonna be mad at me for watching this. But it just seemed like it was pretty hilarious and also like pissing people off at the same time. So just watch that collapse was kind of cringy, honestly. Like watch it like being documented.
The current player is it's really hard. I think I would have to think in depth about people and their personalities, but for retired players, I think I would say Kimberly Newell. She used to be a goalie at Princeton, and I did talk to her about goaltending, and she has probably the most insightful answers out of anyone I'd ever talked to about her process and about the technical aspects. So I would enjoy picking her brain during a hockey game. As far as current player goes, oh my gosh, I don't think I have an answer. Someone who plays for the Bruins, probably.
Again. Anyways.
Pasta? He seems like he would be fun to watch a game with.
This has been awesome. I'm so excited for this book. I'm so grateful to you both for doing this project together. And I can't wait to see you in person so you can sign my copy. And it's really interesting because it's like, it's two of the most important voices, in my opinion, in hockey have done this. And so I thank you on behalf of a hockey community that's in the margins. And I thank you for being on the show. And where can we, before we sign off, where can we find your work?
Oh gosh. Well, I write for College Hockey News mostly now. That's pretty much it. But I link to a lot of stuff on my website, which is just my name.
Evan?
Right now, it's still sometimes stuff out there. So I would say follow me on Twitter, Evan F. Moore. You'll see it on there.
You can also follow me on Twitter, but I'm extremely annoying. So that I'm warning you.
I don't think so, because that you being on Twitter resulted in a book. So I think
that's true. You know, I complain about Twitter all the time, but everything in my journalism career I have, I pretty much owe to Twitter. So, you know.
And I think as much as we hate Twitter and it can be stressful and terrible, we also, all three of us, met through Twitter as well. So there are spaces for those in the margins to meet each other and connect and create community. And I'm so grateful to be in yours. So thanks again for being on Burn It All Down.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us. And I'll suck.